Slugbug there from Michael Goulasian. We've got a chat with him coming up right now. He started off our conversation earlier this week telling me he is very excited that he can make the drive up to Grand Marais to do a house concert because he's had a little trouble recently with his modes of transportation.
My real car is a 98 turbo diesel VW Jetta with 473,000 miles on it.
Wow.
And the transmission finally gave up halfway across Nebraska as I was driving out from Colorado to Michigan. And it started knocking and the car started shaking and the sound was horrific, and you know, you're driving down the road and the car is lurching and swerving and knocking, and you think that it's just going to leave a trail of nuts and bolts down the highway, and it was 200 miles of terror before I finally limped into the VW dealership in Omaha, and they didn't have the parts, and I'm in a rental car. Now, on tour in a rental car, and I feel a lot better driving to Grand Marais in a rental car than I would in my car with 470,000 miles on it.
I'm sorry to hear about your Volkswagen, but at least you got wheels now.
I have wonderful wheels now. I'm in a 2019 Nissan, which makes my car feel like a Conestoga wagon. So I'm happy to be driving up north in a real car. And also my heater doesn't work, so it's nice to be in a car with a working heater.
Yeah. You're living large right now, Michael. I'm glad that you're coming up here.
I am.
For people, you were just up here not too long ago for the ACA show, but for people who may have missed you.
I loved that. That was one of the best concerts of the year.
Really?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, at the Arrowhead Center for the Arts. Mm-hmm. It was such a wonderful audience, and my guitar sounded incredible in that space. And I guess I have to wait a couple of years to come back and play there. But, mm-hmm. you know, Mark Zivrath is insistent. He was just insistent that I come back to Grand Marais this year. And so we're doing a house concert, and, you know, maybe 2021, maybe, I might be able to come back and do another ACA concert.
Yeah. For people who may have missed that show or are thinking about going to this thing in Grand Marais, tell us about your music. I know that you play a really interesting style of guitar, and you were kind of exposed to a lot of different styles of music from an early age.
Yeah, I don't know how it's hard for me to talk about it, but I read what people say online, and they use words like unclassifiable, virtuoso. I mean, I have my own voice. My influences growing up were, you know, everyone from, you know, Doc Watson to Leo Kottke to the Mississippi Delta blues guitar players. My early childhood training was classical music, so, you know, I got the technique in my, you know, muscular memory very, very young. But, boy, the guitar players that really, you know, affected me and influenced me, the Mississippi Delta blues guitar players, John Fahey, Leo Kottke. You know, I listened to a lot of jazz. I listened to a lot of, you know, obviously, you know, you're a kid growing up in the United States in the 1960s. You're hearing the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and Led Zeppelin. You know, if you can imagine all that coming out from someone who plays steel string, instrumental, fingerstyle, open tuning guitar music, you know, with a healthy dose of, Middle Eastern influences, because, you know, my dad was an ethnomusicologist. And like you said, I have a lot of, you know, I wasn't just listening to Merle Haggard, you know, mm-hmm. I was listening to a lot of, Well, I was listening to Merle Haggard, but I was listening to a lot of other music as well. Just comes out. Eventually, you get past your influences, and if you keep playing, you mature as well. You mature as a human being, but you also mature as a musician and an artist, and you find that you're speaking musically with your own voice. Mm. And yeah, you pay respect to the people who influenced you, but you wind up sounding like yourself after a while.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's why people say what I do is uncategorizable, because, you know, essentially I just sound like me. And I don't even want to say finger style, because, you know, I'm not just finger picking. I'm using the right hand in ways like, you know, the flamenco guitarists like Paco de Lucia would play the guitar. You know, I mean, I there are songs that sound a little bit like Leo Kottke. There are songs that sound a little bit more like Michael Hedges. Mm. But it's this hybrid right hand, completely free right hand approach, playing music that's, you know, by turns percussive and also in the next song atmospheric, and you know, and just being grateful that I can write this stuff and record it, and that people love it when they hear it. So I'm just very, very lucky and blessed to be able to do this.
Yeah, there's a guy up here in Cook County that plays harp guitar, and he often has told me about how he feels it's important to try and discover all the sounds you can make with an instrument and really try and get outside the box. And
yeah,
is that a big part of what you
not just yeah, yeah not just do it as a gimmick, or not just do it for the visual wow factor? I mean, you know, in this age of, what do I even want to call it, the YouTube age, the digital instant information age, you know, a lot of information comes to musicians visually, whereas a generation or two ago, you had to listen with your ears. And so now that, I mean, to the point that that harp guitarist was making, he's absolutely right. You want to employ all the different sounds that you can get out of an instrument, but you want to do it in the service of the music. You don't want this to become a gymnastics competition on the guitar. And that's what, I hate to say it, but that's what a lot of people in this YouTube generation are doing. It's like, how do I look playing the guitar instead of, you know, closing your eyes and, you know, is the music touching someone? Is it moving someone? Mm. Is it affecting someone on an emotional or spiritual level?
Yeah.
Instead of just, hey, wow, look at that. You know, he did three somersaults on the neck and whooped around and licked his eyebrows. And, you know, I mean, if that's all people are responding to, I think that's pretty shallow.
It's interesting you say that. And this is well before, I guess, YouTube kind of had a culture of its own, but that's how I learned about the style first in the early days of YouTube, was actually seeing Andy McKee play online.
Andy's a very dear friend. Andy is one of my dearest guitar playing friends, and he also, as you know, is the most visible solo instrumental acoustic steel string guitarist.
Yeah.
Well, the song that put Andy on the map was a tune called Drifting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Andy playing a beautiful melody that incorporates tapping on the guitar and using the guitar as a percussion instrument. And in the process of dazzling a lot of people, Andy developed a huge audience, like hundreds of thousands of people on Facebook and Spotify and Pandora and Instagram. And the downside of that is your audience is a YouTube audience, and they want you to do Drifting the way it was performed, you know, 12 years ago on YouTube at his concerts. So, you know, I've seen Andy recently, and the way he's playing it now is so much more expressive and so much more evocative and so much less in-your-face technical. He's breathing this new life into the song by playing it lyrically and phrasing it and really tuning out and toning down the percussive part. And the song has become so much more beautiful, but you got those YouTube people that don't recognize the song. And they wonder, what happened to the song I like? Well, guess what? Andy evolved as an artist. Andy grew as a musician.
Right.
I absolutely love Andy McKee. He's an example of an artist who just continues every time I hear him, year after year, to grow and evolve and become more and more and more brilliant as an artist. Wish I could say that about a lot of these other people that started out on YouTube, but Andy, you know, I just absolutely love him, and he's genuinely one of the nicest people I've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just honored and blessed to call him a friend. And I've opened for him a few times, too.
Oh, really?
Boy, the concerts that we've done. Oh, my God. I love playing to Andy's audience.
Right.
And then, you know, hopefully some of his fans become my fans as well.
If you're joining us right now, we're talking to Michael Gulazian. He's going to be doing a house concert in Grand Marais on Saturday, and there's some information about that up on our music calendar on WTIP.org. We were talking about evolving as an artist, and I want to know, do you feel that same way that you've evolved as an artist? I know there was a period where you didn't have a lot of new music, and then you came out with this Thunder Heaven Lights fairly recently. So tell me about that.
Well, I got distracted. You know, I had a home get destroyed in Nashville by a flood.
Oh, sorry.
You have to rebuild, and then I wound up inheriting a home in Arizona that was a complete wreck, and, you know, I spent time, you know, reconstructing that home. And, you know, I always wanted to moved to Colorado because that's where I went to school, and the dumbest mistake I ever made was leaving. And so I bought land, and I just finished building a beautiful but very modest little, it's not so little, it's not a tiny home, but it's a modest, very well thought out, passive solar, eco-friendly, super insulated home in Western Colorado. And I never stopped playing guitar while I was, you know, distracted doing all the home building stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, the music continued to evolve. I kept recording, I kept writing. But the big difference in the music, if we're talking about, you know, a human being who evolves as an artist, I listened to music that came out when I was, you know, barely out of my teens. I recorded an album on John Fahey's Tacoma Records label, and it made a huge splash. You know, in the guitar world, I suddenly had a global audience from like nothing to a global audience because I put out this album that, you know, was critically acclaimed on a record label that had international distribution. And I listen to that album now, and I listen to the music that's coming through me now, and it is a universe apart. And as good as that album was, I play nothing like that anymore. I've just grown. You know, I'm not a 21-year-old kid anymore.
Yeah.
After, you know, decades and decades of life having its way with you. Boy, if you don't grow, you know, something's not quite right. If you're the same person in your 50s as you were in your teens, then, you know, that's weird.
That must be weird going back and hearing that. And it's like, you know, this is you. It's like, who is this guy?
What's weird to me is how you know, I mean, the music was great for what it was. And it still gets tons of spin on Spotify and Pandora. But it sure isn't where I am now.
So where are you now?
I'm a lot more free. I'm a lot less bound by musical convention. There were characteristic trademarks of that genre back in the day when I was, you know, signed to Tacoma Records. Although there were songs on that album that were really out there, that just completely exploded the boundaries of what. I mean, there was, the whole album wasn't like that, but, you know, I had a song called Cafe on the Rings of Saturn that, well, how do I put this? There's a British rock guitarist named Robin Trower. He was the lead guitar player for the rock band Procol Harum. Mm-hmm. And when I was signed to Tacoma Records, the parent company was Chrysalis Records. And Robin Trower put out a song called Bridge of Sighs, which was a huge hit. It was like this Pink Floyd kind of slow, atmospheric, just bluesy rock guitar drenched in reverb. And word got back to me that Robin Trower would sit at home and get high, like light up several joints, get completely blasted out of his mind, and repeatedly listen to Cafe on the Rings of Saturn, because it was like Pink Floyd on 12-string guitar with a bottleneck. I mean, we were doing things on that song, employing reverse reverbs and just playing, manipulating meter and manipulating time and doing it in this, I mean, it was like nothing that had ever been done before.
Wow.
And so, you know, I did that when I was, you know, like 20 years old. And so, you know, the seeds, the hints that I would be, you know, pushing the envelope musically were there when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
But now that's all I do. And you know, sometimes just for you know, just to touch back down on planet Earth, you know, I will do songs that are, you know, more, you know, based in the idiom that people will recognize and you know, just be comfortable with. But, you know, I've got a song on the new album called, you know, Wild Honey and Locusts that is as dissonant and harmonically challenging as anything I've ever heard on 6-string guitar ever before. When it comes to those harmonies, my heroes are people like the pianist Bill Evans, guitarist, you know, Michael Hedges,
right.
Egberto Gismonti, the Brazilian guitarist, Ralph Towner, the great jazz guitarist, Thelonious Monk, you know, Charlie Parker, I'm certainly not listening to someone like Chet Atkins, you know, I mean, that's about as down home as you can get. And I left down home when I was about 14 years old.
You mentioned you had that song on your latest album. Is that Thunder Heaven Lights is the latest one?
Yeah.
What can you tell me about that record?
Oh boy. Well, it's definitely my most evolved, album. I don't know if it's my most challenging, because, you know, there's a beauty to all of it. I put out an album a few years ago called Language of the Flame, which might be more challenging in places. But this one, you know, you get to a point, at least I've gotten to a point where the songs sometimes seem to write themselves, and in three cases on this album, the songs came to me all at once, complete. And holy mother of God, that's the spookiest, most otherworldly thing I've ever experienced. You know, you're just sitting there, and I mean, all three of those songs happened when I was tired and it was late, early in the morning. And, you know, you're not quite fully conscious. And, you know, all the stuff that you think about during the day, you know, paying your bills, getting to work on time, you know, you're not really thinking about that. You're out of your own way, essentially. But I've got the guitar in my hands, and music just kind of flew right through me without me being an impediment or an obstacle. My fingers just moved and the songs just came, and boy, that there is nothing more humbling when you realize what just happened.
Yeah.
Like a hand comes down from heaven and just, you know, gives you a gift.
Right. I was going to say.
And then you're blown away. You're floored. And so there's three tracks on the album that happened that way. And the others just kind of seem to, you know, flow and write themselves. All of this happened at a time of great personal transformation about 8 years ago. And, you know, there's some personal stuff that just happened, and everything just, the music just exploded out of me.
That's got to be a spiritual experience, just having that muse.
It was hugely spiritual.
Do you try to convey that same energy to your audience when you perform?
I respect my audience enough to not talk about that, because the music will either touch people and work the way it will, or else it won't. I mean, considering I had nothing to do with those songs entering the world other than just, you know, being the vehicle by which they exist, I have a reverence and respect for that music, and I play those songs, and people cry. People come up to me and they're in tears, and I don't even know who the heck they are, and they're just hugging me. So the music will do what the music will do, and my job is to just stay out of the way.
Wow.
You know, I'm not important. I'm the least important link in the chain. I'm just the guy up there, you know, manipulating the strings and, you know, making the sounds. But, you know, the music itself is the thing that's most important. If I could be invisible, if there was a way that I could be invisible on stage and still play the music, that's what I would like to do.
Wow. That's incredible. Huh. I think technology might make that possible at some point. We'll see.
No.
Michael Gulazian is joining me right now on the air. He's got a house concert coming up in Grammarly on Saturday. You can get more information about that on WTIP.org. I wanted to ask you one more thing about another record of yours that I know gets actually a good amount of playtime here on WTIP, and that's your St. Olaf's album. So I want to know, what was your connection to that school here?
St. Olaf College.
Yeah.
I love St. Olaf College. I don't want to sound like Betty White on the Golden Girls, but, you know, she always talked about St. Olaf College and, like, nobody knew where it was or what it was. But I've been playing there since the early 1980s. Yeah. And I've had periods of, you know, consecutive years of coming back and playing there since the early 80s. And I had one string of concerts where I played 13 years in a row at St. Olaf College. And I would average, like, you know, 500, 600, 700 people in their concert venue. And that's unheard of on the college circuit, because, you know, every 2 years you've got like 70% new people in the audience at a college because of the turnover, the graduation. And so what does that say about St. Olaf College? It's a school where, you know, it produces, you know, doctors and lawyers and, you know, just incredible people that go out and make the world a better place. But a lot of those students are musicians themselves.
Yeah, they've got a big choir history, I know.
Oh, they've got a jazz band history. Here's a school in Northfield, Minnesota that won the Downbeat College Jazz Orchestra of the Year. Like Downbeat, St. Olaf is as hip and excellent musically as any other school in the country. And then on top of that, they've got the St. Olaf Choir, which is, one of the best college choirs, if not the best in the world.
Well, that's cool that you've been able to become part of that and make that a tradition of playing there.
I would not know where I'd be if it wasn't for St. Olaf College. In fact, I'm playing a house concert up in Duluth, 6 days after the house concert in Grand Marais. And it's, the hosts are married couple who met at St. Olaf College. They got married, they've got kids, and they've got a home in Duluth. And, I'm on my way, I'll be on my way to Northland College, which is another place that I love to play, the Environmental College, up on the northern tip of Wisconsin in Ashland, on the south shore of Lake Superior. I don't know how many times I've played there, and I don't know if it's the musicianship of the students or if it's just, that reverence and respect for the earth and the environment and outrage at what is happening to the ecosystem of the earth. And again, this passionate desire to protect the earth, which to me is, I don't know why everyone doesn't feel that way, but I certainly love Northland College with all my heart, and my music very happily seems to resonate with the students there as well.
I was going to say, what kind of reactions do you get from the youth, the student body?
There's no age thing with me, I think about the things that young people are concerned about, like what are we doing to the earth? I have so many, I had a career, I spent decades playing at colleges and universities, and so I've always been around young people. I've always been around faculty at universities and colleges. I've always been around people that are smarter than me. And it's, the facts don't lie. We are, according to the scientists, if we don't take drastic action to make drastic changes to the international economy and move away from fossil fuels as a source of energy, we're doomed. We might have, depending on who you talk to, anywhere from 100 years to 200 years. Otherwise, we're going to be living in bubbles. Well, I don't want to live in a bubble. God created this earth for us to take care of. And I see the beauty in nature. I see the divine presence in all living things. And for human beings to be so arrogant to think that we have any right to exploit this and destroy it for profit, that's just outrageous to me. And that's the way a lot of young people feel. I know young people that don't have any desire to even have children because they don't feel like the world is going to be worth bringing children into to two or three generations from now. So you ask about, is there a generational divide with me musically? Well, no, and there certainly isn't any generational divide with me politically or spiritually or any other way. I think I've gotten smarter and more sensitive with age. I haven't grown into some crusty old saying, get off my lawn.
I don't think you have, man. I didn't mean to inflame you like that. Michael Glazier.
That's the thing about the music. There's a lot of truth in the music, and that's just who I am.
Michael Glazier is joining me right here on the air, and you can get some information about his house concert that's happening Saturday in Grand Marais here. And I guess my last question is, what's next for you? You mentioned the Duluth concert after this one, but what else is coming up for you through the rest of 2019
Ashland,
here.
I'm really looking forward to playing at the Sigurd Olsen Environmental Center at Northland College. Really looking forward to that. And then driving this rental car down to Omaha and picking up my low carbon footprint, high mileage vehicle in Omaha and driving it back to Colorado. I've got another concert in Boulder later on this month. And of course, you know, I just always stay open to receiving music and bringing more music into the world and you know, trying to express the whole range of stuff in terms of beauty and the context of beauty and trying to do it with some grace and definitely with as much humility as I can. So next year I'll be out on the road a lot again. I'll be playing as many concerts as I can and you know, just trying to get people to recognize that we're all, you know, basically one big family, and all the stuff that people throw at us to divide us is really a lot of noise and nonsense. And you know, we're all brothers and sisters, and brothers and sisters fight, but brothers and sisters don't tear each other apart.
Michael, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your music today. Thank you so much for doing this.
Well, it's a joy to come back to the North and to the Arrowhead. And, you know, Minnesota has always been so, so good to me. And I'm just very blessed to be here and looking forward to sharing music with folks up in Grand Marais very soon.
Michael Galazian, once again, he's going to be playing a house concert on Saturday. There's information about how to become part of that on our website. Michael, thank you so much for the time today. I'll see you around.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael.